This episode is brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief. Welcome to The Last Storm. My name is Mark Flatt, and I'm calling in from the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. Today, as always, I'm joined by my brother Dave. He's calling in from Maryland at the banks of the Potomac River. Thanks for joining us. Here we go.
Denver tonight at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern. Pretty stoked about us getting a chance to play them. We got one more game against them on March 26th, so you know we got some time to play them. I hope we can find a way to split them with them. Obviously, we're greedy and love to win both of them, but realistically, I'm cool with splitting with Denver in the next two games we have against them.
Yeah, it's gonna be a big pain in the ass to play them, but. You know, it's an opportunity for some of the guys that, you know, need to play against players like Jokic and just the overall system that the Nuggets put out there defensively. It's going to make it's going to take a big effort from the guys. I'm thinking that's going to be an interesting, you know, two game series. But obviously, we've got to get out there and try to get a win one of these games. We saw what happened last game. We gave up 131 points. We need to figure out how to hold the Nuggets under, what, like maybe 110 points if we're going to have a chance?
Yeah, I would even say 105, to be honest. This Nuggets team is really, really good. 100 points, I feel like we actually have a chance. But Nuggets, I feel like are doing somewhat decent right now. If you look at their past 10 games, so they're just a tough competition. But with Shea in the game, we got 32 against Phoenix, 36 against Indiana, and 37 against Sacramento. You know, who knows what's going to happen? I feel like he's setting himself up for, you know, a huge, huge game. And I'm kind of excited about it.
For sure, man. And, you know, let's face it. Like, this team is, you know, in the midst of quite a bit of adversity, you know, both on the court and keeping players healthy, but also off the court. You know, we're starting to see kind of some of the negativity that we saw last year, you know, in the media start picking up, where they start counting wins as losses and the other way around. And I think that's a difficult environment to play in. And a lot of people don't necessarily, you know, pay attention to that. But this team is out there trying to win. And, you know, what fans do show up to the games, they're cheering for a win. But for some reason, the media is obsessed with cheering for losses.
Yeah, and it kind of gets me to that whole point of, for me, I listen to other podcasts with the Thunder community a lot, just because I'm interested to see what's going on. Some of them I enjoy. Some of them I like the people that are on there. I enjoy listening to them. But there's other ones that it's just like you wonder if they're truly watching the games or they're looking at the box score and they're listening to what all the NBA experts say. And that's where I start getting back to, is that there has to be a way of figuring this out and trying to do something and realize that this team itself and where we're at, there is room for people to understand or not understand exactly where we're going. And I understand there's a lot of people that just, it doesn't click with them yet. But that's why I have to say these Thunder buddies are literally Oklahoma City Thunder's morons of the year. The hell, bro? Like, seriously.
Dude, you could rename Moron of the Year after them, because they win it, like, every fucking year just about. But, yeah, but, dude,
like,
you're right.
This thing you sent me today, outpaced in tank race. Like, right. Do they not fucking understand what's right in front of them? Like, this is, like, listen, I know that we talked about we're not going to go on rants and shit like this. But this is what gets me frustrated, is because these are the guys that people like to listen to because they're big names in the Oklahoma City Thunder community. And they're out there destroying the Thunder and what they're doing because they don't understand. And yet they have a podcast. It doesn't make sense, bro.
Well, they have, you know, columns in the, you know, in the Daily Oklahoman, which is not a surprise. Let's face it. Like, the Oklahoman has gone out of their way to try to destroy the Thunder. Like, the chemistry in the locker room, they created all sorts of issues. Like, in particular, Barry Trammell, he got it to the point where Russ hated him. You know, we've talked about this in the past, like, how after Russ got to the point where he hated Barry, didn't want to answer any questions from Barry, and told Barry, I hate you, or I don't like you, is what he said. And then Barry went on to be like, well, no, this is a Thunder organization's fault. They won't let the players, you know, have the media have access to the players. And then the next thing you know, like, that's a national story. And Barry has thrown himself into the national story. He's thrown the Thunder organization under the bus and Russ under the bus. And this is honestly what Barry does. And more importantly, it's what the Oklahoman does. If you think back to what really started the issues with KD, it was a headline where it said Mr. Unreliable. And it wasn't until KD's mom, right, the player's mother, expressed her disappointment with that, that they finally reconsidered and wrote a retraction. But the thing is, the whole Mr. Unreliable headline, like, this is what the Oklahoman does. There's a reason that it's consistently rated the worst newspaper in the United States, okay? And what happens is they kind of get their value anytime that they can insert themselves into the story. And for a local paper to derive their, like, their power from that, it's really a sad situation, because they have a team like the Thunder, and Barry Trammell, like, let's face it, he belongs covering football, where a loss is something, you know, where you can either rejoice, or if you're, like, genuinely tanking, like, there's no lottery, right? But with the actual lottery in there, and they flatten the lottery odds, it, like being pissed off or saying that we lost when we won, that's just ignorant.
I literally struggle at sometimes understanding the basic concepts of what these guys are putting out there. Being from Oklahoma, every single day for my entire childhood, we got the Daily Oklahoman. You know, all the way up until I was in my 20s that I feel like we stopped getting the Daily Oklahoman. So to me, like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I just get frustrated. I don't quite understand how, when you have a team in an organization like the Oklahoma City Thunder, where everybody else in the league is so envious of them, they literally are like, this is what you need to do to have a successful organization. And then you look at the Daily Oklahoman and it's like, they're failing.
It's trash.
Oklahoma City Thunder's failing.
Let me ask you this. How many fans have you seen show up to the game and actively cheer for the team to lose?
None.
Okay. How many of the coaches or the players have actively tried to lose? How about management? None. Right? Why is it that the media goes to the games, cheers for them to lose, and then acts like they're impartial? Why are they hiding behind this cloak of impartiality when in reality they're cheering for the team to lose and they're leading a fan base in like a mob of we need to lose? And then when we don't live up to their expectation, like last year, they considered it a failure. And we had one simple point. Last year was not a failure. It was a successful rebuild. It's a part of the process. But they were all, we need a top five pick. That's the only thing they ever talked about. And so when we got pick number six, what do they say? It's a failure. It's a failure. But we were always like, why? Sam Presti is the best at recognizing talent. He'll find it anywhere. We don't need the first pick. And they're like, no, we need Cade. We need Cade. We should trade SGA and this year's pick just to get Cade. So they wanted to trade Giddy and SGA for Cade. And these are the fucking quote-unquote experts.
Yeah, again, it's the way that they go about doing it that's frustrating. And I think we should not spend any more of our time, of our valuable time on this podcast talking about those.
Look, I understand what you're saying, but fuck them.
I agree, dude. I agree.
There, I'm done. I just had to put that in there.
I'm glad that we feel this way, because like, we're standing up for our team. We're standing up for our organization, and we're standing up against
this paper is trash, bro. And they've gone after the Thunder since the beginning. Like, think about how much they would, like, Barry Trammell would create issues with the Russ and KD fans.
I know, dude.
It got to the point when Russ won an MVP.
Oh my gosh.
They never repped him. They never loved him the way they loved KD.
Barry Trammell, around the time that the whole contract with Harden comes out, right? Didn't he print something about how Russ said that Harden should never get a full max contract because he doesn't play defense?
Dude,
it was something like that created such a massive issue inside the locker room. And it's like,
nothing would surprise me with Barry Trammell.
It's like, why?
Like, honestly,
why?
Like,
you know, like, why are these guys dipping their nose? I know they're looking for clickbait because that's their job.
It was before clickbait, though, right? It was they needed sexy headlines. And like, for them, the idea of being connected to an NBA team, right, that's the biggest thing that's ever come along. So for them, they can't miss the opportunity. This is their chance for the Hall of Fame, the Sports Hall of Fame, the Oklahoma Hall of Fame.
They're acting like we're New York City. Like, we're losing and all this other stuff, but that's not us. Like, if you look at the Memphis papers, you look at these other papers that have small organizations or small market teams, it's completely different. They should be taking and copying it off of them about the praises and all the other stuff they're doing. I mean, I lived in Denver for 3 years, bro, right?
They love their team.
And here's the thing. They didn't even make the playoffs two of those years. But I never saw anything negative in any papers about them, ever.
It doesn't make sense. The only thing that you can make sense about it is, deep down, he's a very little man who's incredibly insecure. And the problem is, he started taking down the rest of the staff. Like, I used to respect Jenny Carlson, and now it's like 50% of the time, I'm like, I can read it, and I'm like, dude, she's, you know, she's kind of turning like Barry. And even worse, I used to really like Joe Mizzuto, and he is the biggest Barry Trammell miniature ever. And it sucks. It sucks because these people used to be good at what they did. There's still a few people that I respect in the Thunder media, but it's like, it's hard because, like, unless they work for the Thunder, they actively are campaigning for the fans to cheer for this team to lose. And I see them sitting courtside, and it's like, they're the only people, like the media row is the only people that want to see the Thunder lose other than the opposing team. But man, they think they're so self-righteous. And worse than that, they fucking think that they're geniuses. They think that they understand what Sam Presti's doing.
And the thing is, it's crazy about this. Like, they're so focused on us getting another star or this or that. They don't see Dort. They don't see these other stuff. Yeah. And here's my whole point about this. Let's just say we have Shea and Josh out there, right? And those are the two guys that are creating everything for everybody else, right? Our third star in this is something we haven't talked about a lot in this show, but in the past we have, is our bench, bro. We don't need to have a third star out there because we're scoring 30 to 40 points a game from our bench. That's more than most teams ever even can even dream of. So,
and that's when our bench is depleted.
Exactly, bro. And this is exactly where we're getting back to, is that if you recognize what's happening inside of the organization, you recognize the bigger picture. And that's why we're here talking about it. And some people call us, you know, man, all they talk about is Thunder love and Thunder this and Thunder that. It's because we like to educate our listeners about what's happening inside the organization. Because once you understand, once you get what's going, you can see where the organization is going to pick their picks at. You're going to understand where they're trying to win. You're going to understand why they aren't playing certain players because maybe they're not healthy or they're, you know, hurt their shoulder a little bit more than they're letting on to. They keep stuff inside the organization. And it's a lot like what the Patriots do, is like, you never hear of anything that's going on inside the locker room until players leave. And then you hear some stuff or whatever, right? But typically it is closed doors all the time. And in order to be able to be in a small market, you have to have that type of stuff, because to me, it's that brotherhood. It's that family that you're connecting to right now that's so important. And seeing how these guys are doing that and how Josh is fitting in, how Trey Mann is fitting in. I was scared about Trey Mann for a little while. You know, I didn't know if he was going to be able to fit inside this locker room because, you know, he was, you know, going back to his hometown beginning of the season. Some stuff was going on with him and his family. So there were certain things that we didn't see Trey Mann out there for a section of the first part of the season. And I didn't know if that was, you know, him being upset that he wasn't, you know, near home or whatever. It's that transition, bro. You know what I'm saying? Are those players going to buy into the system or are they not? If they don't buy into the system, that's fine. We'll find a different place for them. But obviously Trey Mann bought into the system. Josh Giddey's bought into the system. Aaron Wiggins, JRE, Dort, Shea, all these guys have come through within their first year of playing hoops into the Oklahoma City Thunder organization. This is exactly what we need to be able to have the longevity and win through not just this next season, but we're talking 10 years down the road, because when we have 38 draft picks in the first and second round through the next 7 years, guess what that means, bro? We get to sit back and we get to relax, be patient, and let a lot of these draft picks that we have made trades with all of a sudden become top 10 picks, because no team out there, right, is going to have the longevity of the Oklahoma City Thunder for the next 10 years because we own so many draft picks. So all these people are freaking out. But for me, I look at it and like, these guys are clueless because they can't see the big picture, because all they're looking at is that small, tiny little dot in the middle of the basketball court that is a wrong color. And they're sitting there saying, see that dot, guys? See that small dot? That's the wrong color. That means this organization's fucked.
Yeah, dude. They're that small, really. It's very childish to watch. And It's been, you know, but when you talk about Trey Mann, like he's someone that the national media is starting to, you know, turn and look at and say, hey, this guy is very talented and he has a high level that he can play at. And it's been fun to watch. But like you said, he didn't even have a complete offseason with the team because it was a shortened offseason. And because, you know, in the middle of summer league, he went back home. So we're going to see like what happens with him. But like you look at the progression that Théo Maledon has gone through this year and you think, you know, that Trey Mann isn't going to continue to improve and become a much better player over time. Like I see him being a major focal point of our offense going forward. You know, is that going to be off the bench? Is that going to be in the starting lineup? Honestly, I don't know. But the way that we look at our bench, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Like, all right. Question for you then.
Yeah.
Trey Mann first year or James Harden's first year? Like, truly think about it. Like get into the idea of it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I didn't really realize how special, like, Harden was his first year.
I mean, nobody did. Like, nobody did, really.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so I'm just saying, like, with Trey Mann, like, those glimpses are different than the glimpses you saw with Harden. Harden would, you know, get some really nice and ones, those
fast
types of
breaks,
moves. And you'd be
looking
like,
good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, well, this is, you know, and then his shot took a while to set up. So you were like, is he going to be able to get that off consistently? Then all of a sudden it just, you know, he started hitting the gas pedal. So, I mean, that's an excellent point. Like with Trey Mann though, like he has a couple of moves that when you see him, you're like, okay, that's elite immediately. And over time, Harden was able to show that he had, you know, more than a few that were elite. But where's Trey Mann going to go? I don't know. But here's the thing about the Thunder and what we have seen over and over and over and over from this organization. They take players, they build off of what they can do well, and they give them other skills. There's a reason that former Thunder players are always leading the league in free throws. It's an organizational skill that they teach people. They say, okay, you want a free 7 extra points per game? Here's how you're going to get them. You got to draw contact. And getting to the free throw line is an important thing, just as well as playing defense without fouling. And that's a really cool balance to have on a team.
You're absolutely right, man. And I love how these guys are playing. I love how they're understanding the game together. And most of all, like the most important thing about this all is in a offensive-minded league, we're playing defense at a very, very high level. And to me, that's the most encouraging thing. I know I brought it up like every podcast, like 5 podcasts, but it's something that I look at as a you know, past coach, as if you can play defense at a high level, man, you've got some good things going
for you. What do they always say? Offense wins games, but
defense wins championships. And
right, and it doesn't happen overnight.
Nope. And here's the thing. We're the youngest team. Top 10 team in defense, top 12 team in defense, youngest team in the league right now. And if we keep on getting better like this, man, you know, in the next year we'll be the top 5 team. And the year after we'll be the best defensive team in the league. And that's not with no post player. That's like what we've said is there's no legit 7-foot big body post player downside and the post. And that's fine because that's not what we want. We want this team to continue to doing what they're doing. I'm looking at the schedule and, you know, understanding what we're doing. We have 3 back-to-back games left. We have Milwaukee and Minnesota on March 8th and 9th coming up. March 13th and 14th, we have Memphis versus Charlotte. And then the last one is Orlando versus Boston on March 21st. Which of those 3 matchups do you feel is going to be the toughest?
Man, I look at it every game like one more win. So, like, I look, you know, honestly, they're all going to be tough. Every win is so hard to get. And sometimes we beat teams that we shouldn't beat because they're not prepared. And then the teams that we should beat, you know, we have trouble with those because they're coming out and they're swinging hard. So, I mean, looking at tonight's game against the Nuggets, like, that might be one of the hardest games for the rest of the season. And looking past that, that's really hard to do. And I don't think the team is really looking past that. But you answer your own question. What do you think?
Man, I look at, we have March 8th, March 9th, then March 13th and 14th. So we have 2 back-to-back games there. So, yeah, we have like 3-4 games, days in between them. But still, that looks, I circled that moment as really, that's the deciding factor if we're going to have Josh Giddey back. You talked about it before, possibly we could see him in versus Memphis, but you know, we have a back-to-back game there, Memphis versus Charlotte, right? So I could definitely see him, if he's coming back, possibly for Memphis, and then taking off Charlotte and, you know, playing in San Antonio. I, you know, to me, that's the place that we're going to circle, and I'm going to say, I hope I can see Josh back.
Yeah, so hope is the key word, because, like, honestly, we may not see him. Why would they play him anymore?
I don't know why they would rush his injury back from injury.
Well, not rush him. Like, but why wouldn't they just shut him down? Like, the only reason not to shut him down is chemistry, right? So can we build on that chemistry? Maybe, but, like, how bad is it? Like, it's a lot worse than we thought when we first heard about it.
Well, like, and let's just put it out there. If we get to the 14th of March, right, and he's not back, I mean, there's the majority of the games. So,
I mean, I could see them trying to be like, all right, we'll get you 5 games at the end of the season. To build off of,
yeah,
they
10, 15 minutes.
They
kind of
they brought Gabriel Deck in for 10 games, and you know, like, they understand the value of, like, a couple more games. But, like, I think instead of us looking at it like, we're looking, okay, when will we get him? It could be in, you know, 10 days or something like that. We should start looking at the end of the season and be like, all right, could we have him back for this section of games? You know, because at this stage, like. You told me you had an issue with your hip, but, like, and you also tore your shoulder, like a labrum in your shoulder, yeah. Right? Like,
I was rough. I played basketball like you play football, so.
But, like, what about, like, your hip? Is it, like, can you tear, like, your labrum in your hip? I know it's not labrum, but.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. You can tear your labrum in your hip. Absolutely.
So, I mean, we could be dealing with, like, some sort of instability like right?
And a partial tear doesn't take you out for very long. I mean, sometimes they go in and try to repair the partial tear. A hip one is funky, so they don't like to get in there unless they absolutely need to.
And have you seen, like, a single play that it might have happened on or anything?
Well, that's the problem. That's the biggest issue, man, is if he fell down and bruised his hip, right? I had a bruised hip. It took me about 2.5 weeks to get over, right? And when I was about his age, 19 years old, playing basketball, I got a bruised hip right there. But if he's talking about a torn, you know, something torn in there and a non-physical contact, so non-contact play, bro, and he did something there, then, yeah, there's no doubt that he probably did something to his hip and he's going to be out for some, you know, significant amount of time. But, they don't share this shit with us, which I'm happy they don't. And we always find out afterwards, and it's like, oh, yeah, no wonder why Shea was out this long, or no wonder why Dort was out this long. So,
or Basley last year,
yep,
broken bone. I don't remember which one. It was in his shoulder, though.
Scapula, I think.
Yeah, like, I just feel like maybe...
Maybe we should just trust the process in Oklahoma City Thunder organization that they have what's best for these players. And, you know, for us to sit here and try to figure out when Shea's going to... Or Josh is going to come back, I mean... Yeah. Truly, it's a crap
emotionally, shoot. Bro, I'm just not thinking about him playing anymore. Like,
which sucks.
I'm looking
at
the end of the season.
Did you see the fans in the stands against Sacramento, man? There was almost nobody there. It was the least amount of fans I've seen yet. And I think it's called the Josh Giddey effect, bro. Like, well, I enjoy games so much more with Josh Giddey on that floor. It's something that's so, you know, powerful. It's like the game is being taught to me yet again when Josh is on the floor. And it's just fun.
Yo, when SGA went down, there is a certain definite letdown in the fans going to the games because the best player wasn't there. But by the end of that 10 games, there was a letdown that Giddey wasn't playing, even though SGA was playing. It's crazy, man. Like, he's won the city over in a way that, you know, it took players a long time to do. Like this guy is special.
I mean... Special just isn't enough for me, you know, it's like trying to describe like that first love feeling that you've ever had in your life, you know, like the first moment that you realize that you were truly in love with somebody. Like, that's what I see with Josh on the floor. Like, it's something that is so distinctly different from anything I felt with basketball before. It's a passion. It's something that I see that I'm like, I want the entire team to be able to understand this, because this style of basketball with the Oklahoma City Thunder has been playing like this for a while before Josh has come in, and Josh has just come in and just fit in perfectly. And to me, that's just like, it's so mind boggling. We've seen so many rookies come through that have either fizzled out or that have, you know, spent their 4 years and gone some other place, or 3 years, and then we traded them. like Josh Giddey fit in right away, and it was just spectacular. I mean, on all levels.
And you have a number two jersey hanging up right behind you. It's not like, you know, you've been waiting for Josh Giddey to show up. We love SGA. Oh, we love this team.
SGA made me fall in love with this Thunder organization all over again. And that was with SGA and Chris Paul. I mean, if you're like me and like Mark, when we traded Russ to Houston, there was a big moment where it was emotional for all of us fans. I mean, if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, you got emotional because that was our boy. That was Russ. That was our homegrown young man that we loved passionately, and he got traded. And it was like, oh, and here comes Chris Paul, you know, back in the trade. Everybody's like, he's washed up, you know, and we get, you know, Shea in there, and Chris Paul is doing his thing with Dennis Schroeder. And all of a sudden this young man, Shea, starts just bawling. And we watched him play with the Clippers before, but his level of knowledge of the game was just like, oh my God. And then at the end of the season, we saw Dort, and it was these two guys, and all of a sudden Mark and I are like, we got a chance here. We got a chance to fast forward our rebuild because our rebuild's coming, and this is an opportunity for this to happen. And it was passion, man. It was the moment that I recognized this Oklahoma City Thunder did something special, and they weren't done. They weren't done trading. They weren't done adding draft picks and drafting players. But that was the moment that I realized this was different than anything else. It was nice. What about you? When was that moment, Mark, for you?
Yeah, man. When we traded for SGA, like, I had fallen in love with SGA. I didn't watch him in college at all. So I fell in love with him when he was with the Clippers. I saw, like, the way that he just continuously made the right play. So he was the right guy for the right moment every time. And it wasn't like he was killing teams by knocking down shots. It was just his knowledge of how to make the right play at the right time. And he was always attacking. So you love that when somebody's aggressive, but they also are doing the right thing. When we traded Paul George, I was like, bro, I had gotten tired of Russ and Paul George.
I did too.
Because it was like, I didn't believe we could get past the first round.
I didn't believe
and
either.
As soon as I lost that belief, like I it was hard to really watch the regular season. And after Dame hit that shot, it was just like, well, we're going to run it back. You know what I mean? Like seriously, like we weren't, like Russ was talking a lot and we weren't even in it. Like, and it was hard. So, you know, we get to this point where we're willing to pull the trigger on that. And I'm like, all right, man, like that's important. And then, you know, what we were able to do with the Houston trade, that was pretty significant, giving Russ the opportunity to leave, which when you look at what happened last night, bro, it was like, or two nights ago, Russ scored like 8 points on 15 shots. SGA scores 37 on 16 shots. Yep. And like, I'm just like, look, man, like this team was making the right decision and they wanted to do the right thing for Russ. But they wanted, so when Russ left, like I was actually relieved because I didn't think this team could take on SGA's identity. But when we started like digging into the draft and we were like, all right, Giddy's our guy, you know, like there's no doubt. Like, and then we picked Giddy. Like what that said to me was like we understand what's going on. Like they're picking the guys that are going to push the timeline as far out as possible. Like from there, we're going to watch what happens but for this team exceeding that timeline. But yeah, like Dort showing up and becoming a legit player, that was one of the most exciting series. Like after having incredibly disappointing playoff series, we go to game 7, you know, against the Rockets, and Dort puts up 30. And we're sitting there being like, yo, this team is for real. And guess who they still hadn't earned the respect of? The Oklahoma City Thunder media. Like, everybody out there, as much as they didn't want to keep Chris Paul, they wanted to go tanking, you know, they wanted to do all that stuff, they were incredibly, incredibly excited when we finally, like, okay, now we have the opportunity to lose. And the first half of last season, we exceeded everybody's expectations, and they threw little fits. It was incredible to watch. And then SGA goes down with injury, and literally people were celebrating. Like, the Oklahoma City Thunder media, who pretends to be impartial, but really, they only want to advance their own careers. And they're sitting there celebrating his injury. And then once again, we have another rising star in our organization get hurt, and people are looking at it as an opportunity to lose, but those guys are competing. Like, I just can't imagine. Like, you and I both coached, like, pretty much all levels from high school down, right? Like, I remember coaching 10 and under. I know you coached 12 and under. I coached 14 and under, 16 and under. Like, you were an assistant on 18 and under. Like, I never was a head coach 18 and under.
I coached 18 under boys and girls later in my life as well. So, like, or, you know,
high school all the way up, right? And so here's the thing. Could you imagine if everybody, even the own organization, wanted the team to lose? Like not within the organization, but the people on the outside who are supposed to be the fans, you know, supposed to be supporting them. What if everybody was wanting that team to lose? Like, that would create some serious issues in the locker room. But this team hasn't let it affect them, but that's a mini miracle. It speaks to the organizational focus and their commitment to what's right for this team. But there's a reason the team doesn't trust the media and the media doesn't trust the team.
Yeah, and it is a little bit different, you know, with, you know, like I said, like high school ball, when I was coaching high school ball, obviously we're not trying to lose games there. We're trying to win every single game we can possibly win, even if we had a losing season one of the years. But the point is that you look at it and you're saying, okay, this is where we need to be, and this is where we're not at. NBA, it's different because you have draft picks that you can get better at in the off season. So it makes sense why teams tank. But when you're talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder and their organization, as far as tanking as that, it doesn't make as much sense. And a lot of that is yes, we would love to see a top, you know, we would love to see the number one pick come to us. I mean, like, honestly, Mark and I would like get so geeked out about the number one pick coming to us that it would be ridiculous. But we also have a reality check, because sometimes that's just not going to happen. And looking at what this Oklahoma City Thunder team is doing right now, I look at it and I was like, okay, if we win 5 more games, that puts us in a spot where we're going to be at, you know, 6th place. Same spot we're going to be at where we were at last year, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, again, this is not horrible territory. The top 3 are set in stone. Everybody else after that, maybe top 4 are set in stone with Ivy. But everything else after that is kind of, you know, what was last year. You know, like, they knew who was going to go 1 through 4, you know, and then it kind of like a what's going to happen after that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means for the Oklahoma City Thunder, but I do know that with the way that Sam Presti is designing stuff is that, yes, it's great if we get a top pick. But even if we get a top pick, it doesn't mean that we're going to pick that pick. It probably means that we would even consider a trade if we don't consider that pick as being a you know, altering of a season, you know, an altering of an organization, because a number one pick to me is something, somebody like that. And if you can't get that out of number one pick, then we've seen it before. Teams trade out that.
Yeah, and it's the right thing to do occasionally, especially when you don't believe in the guy that's the consensus number one. But if you look at, like, a team like the Cavs, like, they had 3 number one picks after LeBron left, right? It was, like, Anthony Bennett, Kyrie, and Andrew Wiggins. And it wasn't until they got rid of all of those guys and they really built the team in a different way, like organizational value and through the draft, through some trades, that they've actually become a team that people are respecting. So, you know, getting to that number one pick, you know, that doesn't guarantee anything. In fact, it's a pretty fucking bad uphill battle to climb if you don't have the organizational values that you need to move from number one pick into a playoff contender. So, yeah, we would love to see that happen. But are we willing to actively cheer for this team in the face of them competing at a high level to lose? Fuck no, man.
We believe in the Oklahoma City Thunder. We believe in the organization. We believe in the players. We believe in the coaches all the way down and up. So for us, it's easy. For us, it doesn't take much for us to just believe in what's happening. And that's where Mark and I are at. We believe in what's happening with this Oklahoma City Thunder's situation. We believe in what's happening inside the locker room, what's happening with the coaches, the player development, aspects of everything. We believe. And that's all it is, you know, some people are out there saying, you know, we don't believe in it. We don't think this is right. This is wrong. This is wrong. And that's fine. Everybody has their own opinion. But we believe in Josh Giddey. We believe in Shea. We believe in Dort. We believe this team from top to bottom has what it takes to be able to compete in a couple years for a championship, in a few years for a championship. Everything else doesn't fucking matter. So we appreciate every single one of you guys. We appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back after the game tomorrow to talk about it, break it down, and discuss what happened. I'm sure we'll have some type of injury update at that point, too, to figure out what's going on with some of these players. So stay tuned for that. We appreciate you guys. Thunder up. And this episode has been brought to you by George Foreman's Knockout Pain Relief.